On the border of Bolivia, working for pennies, treated like a slave. The coca fields have to be ready. The spirit of my people is starving, broken and sweaty. Dreaming about revolution, looking at my machete. But the workload is too heavy to rise up in arms. And if I ran away, I know they'd probably murder my moms.
Okay, listen, Juan Valdez, just get me my product before we chop off your hands for workers' misconduct. I got the power to shoot a cop up and not get charged. And it would be sad to see your family in front of a firing squad. So the...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now in the studio is Anne-Marie O'Connor, the author of a new book just out, The Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece, Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. Previously, she was a foreign correspondent for Reuters and a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times for 12 years and has written extensively on the Klimt painting and the Bloch-Bauer family's efforts to recover its art collection. She currently writes for the Washington Post from Mexico City, where her husband, William Booth, is the Washington Post bureau chief. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anne-Marie O'Connor.
Thank you for having me.
And just before we get into your book, The Lady in Gold, I just covered a bit of the recently Mexico's war on drugs, the never-ending war on drugs, which clearly I think will be a big centerpiece in the upcoming presidential elections. But you've been doing some coverage down there of some of the more appalling aspects of the price that Mexico's paying for the war on drugs, where you've been covering how the drug cartels kidnap women for sex trafficking. Can you give us a bit of a sketch of the work that you've been doing?
Yes, according to U.S. officials, the drug cartels are now expanding into other businesses. One of those businesses, in the case of the Zetas drug cartel, one of the most ruthless cartels in Mexico, they are expanding into sex traffic. Women who come over the border from Central America who want to go and work in the United States, often to support their children that they leave back in Central America, are coming up through Mexico on trains. Zetas drug cartel members, collaborating with the police often and other authorities, often watch the immigrants come off the trains, and they choose the women that they want and take them to their safe houses. Now, this also happens on the highways at checkpoints. They stop women and invite them into safe houses. Often the women are unaware of who they are. They're offered sometimes food and water. Once in these safe houses, some of the women are selected for members of the drug cartel. Other women have been taken to the northern border, where they're taken from bars to brothels. In one case, a Zetas group kidnapped some women and tattooed them with a Z on their arm as a Zetas acquisition,
right,
and took them to brothels against their will. And this is something, according to diplomats, that drug cartels are moving into, particularly the Zetas.
Well, you know, it's an interesting and morbid kind of connection here to your book, Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece, Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. As much as you tell the story of the heirs of the family that had the painting and what happened to them during the Holocaust, you know, people forget, I guess, how hideous it all was. I was reading your book towards the end there. The fate of so much artwork was in the hands of these SS guys who were at this big chateau. And for sport, they were pulling people out of the labor camps. And for amusement at parties, they'd shoot them and have them run, you know, across the lawn like rabbits, and even have their girlfriends participate in the shooting of prisoners. And the whole story of what happened to these people and how they had to sell their souls to the Nazis and how criminal the whole operation was. And of course, you know, as we all know, the prisoners who were marched into the death camps and onto their deaths were all tattooed as well. I know it's a bit of a reach, but I guess we're talking about the continuum of human cruelty here.
Well, of course, the world was horrified by the atrocities of the Holocaust, but the unaddressed wrongs have lingered on into the modern times with insurance accounts, bank accounts, leases, unpaid pensions. And now, finally, the world is getting around to resolving the art claims. Now, Hitler's army stole 20% of the art in Europe. Tens of thousands of these works have not been returned, and they were hidden away in apartments, castles, sold on the gray market to people who are willing to buy stolen art to hang in their homes. In the case of these paintings in this book, they were not locked away in some mysterious place. These paintings were hanging in the National Art Museum in Austria. Now, this is not completely unusual. Austria, since this case began of the Blockbauer Klimts, Austria has returned a dozen Klimt paintings that were hanging in national museums, 10 of them in the Belvedere, the Austrian gallery, the main art gallery, the Louvre of Middle Europe. So the unique aspect of these paintings is that they were very prominent in public. And this is not that uncommon, this was not that uncommon when this case began. There were paintings in the galleries and in the art museums. When heirs approached the art museums and asked them, I think this belonged to my uncle. I think this may have been stolen. The museums always responded, no, these were donations. And this is what they told many heirs, including the heirs to an enormous Rothschild collection that was also returned.
So this story, though, has a Los Angeles connection. The painting itself, of course, scandalized Viennese society in, 1907? The Klimt and the subject perhaps had an affair. That's an assumption, right, but not a wild one.
This painting was created in a very specific time and place, in turn of the century of Vienna, what people now call the Age of Freud. A very exciting, cutting-edge time where people were embracing new ideas of art, music, and psychology. The women that Klimt painted were his patrons. They sustained his development as an artist and his progression into innovative modern art. Now, this painting is considered the apex of his painted mosaic style. He was at the height of his gold paintings, his gold series, and the painting of this woman is encoded with Egyptian eyes of Horus, symbols of protection and power, but also with almond-shaped designs that many people saw as coding for female sex. So it was a very incendiary painting on many levels.
And without getting into Klimt's somewhat wild sex life, right? We don't have to go there. But the long and the short of it is that the Germans seized this painting during World War II, and that the heirs here based in Los Angeles, aided by the grandson of the composer Arnold Schoenberg, tried to wrest them away. And after a long legal battle, the painting was returned to the heirs and then ultimately sold for a record amount of money to Estee Lauder heir Ron Lauder. That's the historical sketch, right?
Yes, that is correct. This painting became a landmark restitution case. As time wore on, it wasn't just about the restitution of a painting, but about the restitution of history. Because as this 8-year legal battle was waged by Randall Schoenberg, a Los Angeles attorney, many other heirs came forward and started to ask for their paintings. In an art show in the year 2000 called Klimt's Women at the Belvedere Museum in Vienna, they opened the show, and the heirs to the poster of the show immediately stepped forward to claim the painting, Lady with Feather Hat and Boa. And there were turned out to be many stolen paintings in this show. And the inclusion of the portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer, this gold portrait, prompted one Vienna journalist to compare the museum to a bloody gangster's mall parading around with jewelry they claim the victim gave them as a present. This painting was the catalyst for many of these other cases, of these other dozen paintings that were returned.
So we have all kinds of historical overlaps here. We started out talking about the brutality in Mexico and how it reminded me, at least, of some of the brutality that you unveil in this new book, The Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer, Anne-Marie O'Connor, and the history of how this painting was recovered. And now, of course, it's in the hands, I think it was sold for a record amount of money, in the hands of Ron Lauder, the heir to Estee Lauder, who, by the way, is the poster boy for the 1%. He is the guy that literally has invented all of the tax laws to preserve inheritance. A very much, as I say, a poster boy for those people who inherited money and don't want to pay taxes. So what am I saying here? You're not...
Well, Ron Lauder is the owner. Ron Lauder is the director of the Neue Gallery. This is a museum that showcases Germanic art and art of this period of German Expressionist art and the work of artists such as Gustav Klimt. Now, this museum, to some degree, is an appropriate home for that painting because in Austria, the story of this painting was not known. The story of Klimt's female models as patrons of his art was relatively unknown until this case arose. And now it's in a place where they can actually tell this history and showcase the painting with its authentic heritage.
And presumably this family that was so wronged have ended up fairly wealthy.
I mean, yes, that is correct. I think that is a safe assumption.
What was it, 104?
The painting was sold for $135 million, and then other paintings were sold at auction for others, uh-huh. including the second portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. I think the total proceeds were somewhere around $325 million.
Good Lord.
So.
And how much was destroyed by that SS guy that showed up on a bicycle just at the end of the war and set the place on fire?
Well, one of the terrible aspects of the terrible World War II, at the end of the war, Hitler decreed the demolition on Reich territory, which was known as the Nero Decree, where they were supposed to burn everything in advance of the enemy. Just as in Hitler's fantasies in those days, he was thinking just as Vienna burned the buildings outside of its walls in the advance of the Turks. So to serve the Nero Decree, across Austria and in Germany, people marched out slave laborers and shot them. They burned castles. They destroyed things. It never got very far because the Nazi leader who was in charge with carrying it out lost his nerve. But before it fizzled, SS officers held an enormous party at a castle in Austria where 15 or more Klimt paintings were stored. It was one of the greatest collections of the work of Gustav Klimt and some of his most important works. At the end of this party, apparently they set off dynamite charges throughout the building, and those set off ammunition that had been stored there by German army soldiers. So the entire castle blew up and burned to the ground. Now, no one will ever know how many paintings were in there because some of them are still outstanding and unaccounted for, but probably 15 paintings burned there. And it was really a tragedy. These great works of art were destroyed, and some of them had not been photographed in color. They'd only been photographed in black and white at that time because they'd been stolen from Jewish collections, one in particular, and taken from their homes and put in National Museum and then taken to this castle for storage during the war. And they had not had a chance to photograph them in color. So there, for some of these paintings, there are no color reproductions. So that was one of the tragedies at the end of the war.
So again, I'm speaking with Anne-Marie O'Connor, the author of the new book just out, The Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece, Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. And just to return, if I can, to the work that you've been doing in Mexico City, where you been writing for the Washington Post. Your husband's the bureau chief down there, and you've told us at the beginning you've been writing about how the drug cartels have been kidnapping women for sex trafficking, and clearly the war on drugs are weighing heavily on the Mexican elections, aren't they?
That is correct. The war on drugs as an issue, on how to deal with it, on whether money is getting into elections campaigns, drug money. It's become a huge issue there. Whether the violence is really worth the drug war, in other words, whether going after the drug traffickers is worth the violence that has ensued in Mexico, it's certainly the central issue that people talk about in Mexico now.
And isn't there sort of an anti-American angle to it, or a subtext, in as much as A lot of Mexicans feel they're fighting the drug war on behalf of the Americans, and they're the ones that are getting killed. And the Americans are the customers for these drugs. And also they supply the arms with which the cartels are killing the police and other Mexicans.
Well, yeah, to Mexicans at all social levels, it's very ironic that drug use is so endemic in the United States, yet they're going after the producers of drugs in Mexico so energetically and spending so many resources, Mexican resources and lives, as well as U.S. resources. One of the criticisms that many Mexicans have is that it's hypocritical when marijuana is grown in California and used for medical purposes here and it, to some degree endorsed for that use, that they take such pains to destroy marijuana plantations in Mexico, and because it just seems like a contradiction to many Mexicans.
So does it mean then that the outgoing president who prosecuted this war, that his party is toast? And conversely, does it mean that the Free Party, even though some of their candidates are having problems, who in many ways had an alliance with the drug cartels when they were in power, is this exhaustion factor going to make it easier for perhaps a pre-comeback?
It will certainly play a role in the elections. It's too soon to tell whether it will be decisive in the case of the PAN party, the ruling party, because the strengths and the weaknesses of the candidates will also play into this. But certainly, I think it gave an early help to the pre-candidate at the beginning of the races.
And what about the PRD, the López Obrador's party? He allegedly won the last election, or certainly his predecessor won back at the time that Salinas won and the ballots were burned. Is there any sense that they're going to make a comeback, or is he just sort of whistling, baying in the wind?
Well, he's been much more modest in the polls, of course, than the last round of elections. But, of course, his supporters are still very hopeful, and he has some strong supporters.
So tell me about what you're going to be doing tomorrow night at the Skirball Cultural Center here in Los Angeles. Amory O'Connor, you'll be at the Zocalo.
I'll be at the Zocalo. I'll be talking about this painting, which, even though it has its roots in turn-of-the-century Vienna, for me, it was an L.A. story, and I came across this in Los Angeles. Just in an item that I read in a community newspaper, the West Side Weekly, I read that a neighborhood woman in 2001 was trying to get back a painting of her aunt from Austria. And this was very common in those days. You read about this all the time, and people never got these paintings back. They were in Europe. It was very difficult and presented a lot of legal challenges. But I looked at a picture of the painting and I thought, oh my God, that painting, because it's one of the most recognizable paintings in the world. So I called 411 and I got the number of this woman in the newspaper and I called her on the phone and she invited me over. And she told me the most amazing story about her aunt, who is a patron of Gustav Klimt and part of a group of very remarkable women who were also his patrons, who were suffragettes and socialists and atheists and tremendously intellectual women of their times. And she talked about how these paintings of these women represented this very unique time in Klimt's artistic history.
Well, it's a beautiful book, and it's an extraordinary story. And I wish we had more time because I want to talk to you about the work that you're doing now in Mexico City because, we have this strange relationship with a first world country and in many ways a third world country sharing such a long common border and having so much of their relationship is defined by this dysfunctional war on drugs. I know we keep revisiting it and we keep repeating the same story largely. Is that
well, I think this is an issue that's not going to go away. There's no clear answer in sight. The problem remains. The violence remains. It's a problem that's shared by both countries. And the problem of consumption remains in the United States. So I just don't think this is an issue. I think this is something you'll be talking about in 6 months, too.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Amory O'Connor.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Anne Marie O'Connor, the author of Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. Previously, she was a foreign correspondent for Reuters and a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times for 12 years and has written extensively on the Klimt paintings and the Bloch-Bauer family's efforts to recover its art collection. She currently writes for the Washington Post from Mexico City, where her husband, William Booth, is the Washington Post bureau chief. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with Paul Pillar, a very senior guy inside the CIA. He lived through the Iraq War, knows what a catastrophe it was for the United States, and sees the same drumbeat of war happening, the same neocons who ginned up the Iraq War are now ginning up a war with Iran. The difference this time, however, is that the first war was not on behalf of Israel, although the neocons are close to Netanyahu. This war is entirely Israel's idea, and Netanyahu, through AIPAC and their support on Capitol Hill, support on both sides, are pushing hard for this war, and the president still could be stuck with a war that he doesn't want. It's amazing that you even have to have a conversation like this, and it makes you wonder about the superpower, who's in charge here. Then we spoke about this big demonstration. 10,000 students today converged on the California State Capitol in Sacramento. I talked with Bob Samuels, the president of the University Council, and he's one of the organizers of this Occupy the Capitol movement that's taking place. It's a pretty disgraceful to think that the state of California was the country's leader in public education, and it's now languishing near the bottom with Mississippi, simply because what money used to be spent on education now goes to prisons. And Samuels and the Occupy California Capitol demonstrators want a millionaire's tax, which they feel that they'll get on the ballot. There's no way in the state of California, because of the dysfunctional nature of the legislature with the requirements of two-thirds majorities for taxes and revenues and budgets, that the legislature will ever pass any kind of meaningful ways to rescue education from the chopping block. And it does seem that that's the first thing that people want to cut. Then we spoke with Anne Marie O'Connor, who works down in Mexico City with the Washington Post. She's been covering the drug war from the angle of the women being kidnapped and sent into the slave trade, the Central American immigrants. It's a chilling story. She also has an amazing book, The Lady in Gold, The Extraordinary Tale of Gustav Klimt's Masterpiece Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I would like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting. You can also, where you can also contact me at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.